call to order this hearing of the Senate Committee on Public Employment and Retirement. I want to welcome everyone for being here. And so we have actually three items, two items which we'll be hearing, and then third has been heard already. That's SB 681, so it'll be a vote only. So with that, Secretary, do you want to call the roll for establishing quorum?
Pan.
Here.
Pan present. Morrell. Leva.
Here.
Leva present. Morlock.
Present.
Present. Portantino.
Here.
Portantino present.
Okay, we have a quorum. Senator Morlock, do you wish to present item number one, SB 656?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. Happy New Year. In my role, colleagues, as a county supervisor, I observed a lot of fun things with the Superior Court in Orange County. One, there seemed to be an interesting friction between the governor and the judiciary branch when it came to budgets, reserves, et cetera. Two, the current vesting for newer judges in the Judges Retirement Plan 2, also known as JRS-2, has created concerns after having been road tested for a number of years. We've got experience studies now. Three, the JRS-2 is at or close to being fully funded. Four, making plan changes to a defined benefit pension plan can generate a new unfunded actuarial accrued liability. Five, although Governor Brown is making judicial appointments, I wonder if those selected could have been of a higher caliber, as many great candidates may have declined due to the friction and frustrations of the plan. And JRS-2 judges appear to be willing to contribute towards any unfunded liability that may be created. What adjustments does this JRS-2 formula need? Those appointed since 1998 must serve 20 years and must be 65 to retire. For those appointed who are 45 or younger, they must work full-time in the position until age 65 with the commensurate defined benefit withholdings and contributions. Those 50 or older must work 20 years or reach the age of 70 to retire with a pension. These two rigid parameters force judges to remain on the bench even when they face personal, health, or family issues. There is no option for deferral or reduction, as not completing the terms could mean receiving no pension at all. SB 656 would allow for early retirements while delaying pension benefits until they reach the age of 65 or 70, whichever is applicable. For a small cost, younger and capable individuals would be interested in this critical role in our society. Let me remind you, Mr. Chair, that I am a pension reform advocate and one who is trying to find viable solutions to assure sustainability with our public employee defined benefit pension plans. I'm also an advocate for proper and reasonable incentives to attract the best and the brightest. SB 656 is an opportunity to provide a more market competitive defined benefit pension for some 1,800 Superior Court judges who are boxed in by rigid parameters. Certain assumptions would have to be made by the actuaries, and experience studies every 3 years will verify if appropriate forecasting has been realized. Accordingly, I recommend approval of SB 656 to improve morale for our judiciary, to fully vet the ramifications with CalPERS, and work with the JRS-2 members to find a fair and reasonable solution toward addressing any new costs. And Mr. Chair, I do have witnesses.
Thank you. Witnesses and support.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Judge Steve White from Sacramento County. I'm the president of the Alliance of California Judges. The problem that Senator Morlock addresses today through this legislation is not something anybody on this committee had anything to do with creating, but the people who did do it could not, I am certain, have intended that somebody who dies a day before his or her 65th birthday or his or her 70th birthday would leave their spouse with no retirement benefits of any kind. They would just get their contributions back. That is not good policy. No one could have wanted that to happen. I'd like, with leave of the chair, if I could just have the judges in the audience stand, not say anything, but just stand to be recognized. Judges, would you stand? And judges from all over the state. We would have had many more.
Thank you.
And also, I would like to introduce to you somebody to talk about individual cases where this has wreaked havoc, and that is Judge Lance Ito, a friend and colleague and member of the Alliance of California Judges.
Thank you, Judge White. Dr. Pan, Vice Chair Morrell, Senator Leyva, Senator, my favorite, Senator Fortuncino.
I knew you would say that.
Well, there's good reason for that. My name is Lance Ito. I retired 3 years ago in 2015 after serving 28 years on the municipal and superior courts in Los Angeles, and I earned this gold watch. My retirement under the California Judges Retirement System is not impacted by any of the proposals that are here before you today. I have no financial interest in this. I have no dog in this fight except for this. One of the reasons our country, this wonderful experiment in multicultural representative democracy, is as successful as it is because we have rules. The rules that you make, the rules mean something. And our society operates well because we have good courts and a good legal system to enforce those rules. We each here care deeply for the strength and vitality of our justice system, and that system depends upon highly qualified men and women to serve in our judiciary and who devote the prime of their life's work to the high calling of public service. Now, of course, November the 9th, 1994 was a memorable date for many reasons. As you know, Chandrika Kumaratunga became the first woman to be elected president of Sri Lanka. I had just finished jury selection in the O.J. Simpson criminal case. And Judges Retirement System 2, commonly referred to as JRS 2, became effective to any judge who took office on or after that date. Now, JRS 2 had a lot of good things about it, that being that, and combined with PEPRA, that now JRS 2 is fiscally sound. There have been some fluctuations in the market, but as taxpayers will appreciate, obviously, we believe that it is a fiscally and financially and actuarially sound system. However, JRS 2 allows for a service retirement in just two manners, at age 65 with 20 years of service, and at age 70 with between 5 and 19 years of service. Now, you ask, okay, what's so bad about that? Let me give you scenario number one. You are appointed to the bench at age 40, and after a full 20 years of service on the bench, you are now 60 years old, and some 35-year-old deputy district attorney decides he's going to challenge you at your next election. For some reason, you manage to lose that election. As you know, politicians occasionally lose their elections. And what is your reward? Your reward is through JRS 2, you returned your monetary contributions, and that's it. A sadder scenario is that of our colleague, Judge Paul Vortman, who was 55 years old when he was appointed to the bench in Tulare County in 1999 and falling under JRS 2. In October of 2013, he was diagnosed with metastatic cancer, and because he had not yet reached the age of 70, if he were to retire at that time, all he would receive back was his monetary contributions, and his wife would have been left with no survivor benefit. His decision to stay on the bench until he reached age, his decision was to stay and survive as long as he could. And he went through many, many rounds of very caustic cancer treatments and managed to survive to 40 days past his 70th birthday. His wife now collects a defined benefit pension based upon his then 15 years of service. The last 2 years of his life were hell. And his colleagues, we're grateful that his colleagues were able to take up the slack, but no man should be forced to do that. No woman should be forced to do that. Judges, and I would say that, you know, this is a what we call cliffhanger vesting. There's no other category of public employees in the state of California that are subject to this harsh and senseless restriction. Judges from around the state have written to this committee voicing their support for 656. On Saturday, I attended a memorial service for a colleague of mine, Judge Beverly Reed O'Connell, And at the reception that followed, there are more than 500 judges at this memorial service. I had more than 20 come up to me and wish me good luck and wish this committee wisdom in its consideration of this bill. The modifications contained in SB 656 are not a get-your-pension-early formula. Not a dime will be paid out until the subject judge reaches the defined age of 65 or 70. We only ask for a simple mechanism to defer a well-earned service retirement. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other witnesses in support? And I appreciate all the judges standing. Any witnesses in opposition? Seeing none, questions from committee members? All right.
It's good to see the judge, my constituent.
There you go. It's Senator Morrell.
Yes, I do have a couple of questions. Microphone. I just want to, if I'm reading this right, so you can retire and get 75% of your annual salary, correct?
If you survive to the right age to do that.
But you could continue working, still get that 25% more, so you'd still be making more money, wouldn't you?
No. You mean in lieu of retirement, you continue to work, you'd be working at your regular salary, yes.
Yeah. So
that's true.
Okay, so you make that sound like a negative, but it's really a positive, isn't it?
The where it becomes a problem is where somebody cannot stay on the bench until they're 65 or 70. Either they're physically unable to do it, or here's another example where somebody, judge whose wife developed Alzheimer's, he had two more years he had to go before he would get a pension, and he had to spend the 2 years that she was declining rapidly from Alzheimer's working instead of retiring with her and having a pension. That kind of thing. This is not something, I do want to make this point emphatically, very few judges would elect to leave the bench before they're 65 or 70 and otherwise qualified to retire. This is not an avenue for judges to step off the bench. It's to create, cure an inequity where a result that I cannot believe the legislature ever intended is inflicting havoc on households because of the results that Judge Ito was talking about.
And then, can you restate that, your point about if you lose an election?
You will only earn a service retirement if you reach age 65 with at least 20 years of service. If you are a channel, let's say, for example, I was appointed when I was 37 years old. So I have several times stood for re-election, and I was lucky enough not to ever lose an election. But I have colleagues who may be challenged. They may lose that election if they're not 65 by when the old term expires. That's the end, because they have not reached the age 65 to qualify for a service pension. They get their contributions back, but that's it, plus interest.
Having been in business all my life before I got here 7 years ago, I don't have sympathy for you on that, because mm-hmm. in the real world, it doesn't work that way. You lose. So anyway, look at my friend, Senator Morlock, is a pension reform guy. I'm trying to figure out where the real reform here is. I like opportunity for all, favoritism towards none. And so I'm trying to figure out where this is across the line. And then I have one last question.
The problem is, we are the only public employee in the state of California, and I'm not aware of any other judge in the United States that has this restriction on their pension. We're just asking, and this doesn't apply to me. I'm asking that the colleagues who followed me be treated like I was.
Okay, and then one, Senator Morlock, estimated cost, do we have an approximate how much extra it's going to cost?
We have an approximate number. Senator Morrell, maybe just to answer the question one more time, maybe with my understanding.
Yeah.
This is sort of a peculiar DC-DB hybrid. It's a defined contribution plan. If you do not finish the terms, if you don't stay the 20 years, then you get what you contributed, I believe it's 8%, what you contributed plus interest, which is like a really poor financial planning. It's like you don't just put money in a bank account. You put it in a diversified portfolio. But if for some reason, by happenstance or circumstance, you pass away or, you know, these other issues, then you just get your principal back. You don't get a, you don't really get a defined benefit pension plan. So it makes this plan a little awkward. We've had it reviewed by an actuary, and the actuary says it might cost another $25 million. And so we've been working with the judges to say, okay, how do we take care of that? You know, and so today will get us moving forward to find a good answer. We work with CalPERS, and we work with a reputable outside actuary. The $25 million might be a tad high, but I think we can still work on a way to remedy what may be created, depending on the assumptions that are made, and depending on what do we do with the contributions made by the judges.
Okay, since you're my good friend, I want to help you move this forward, so I'm going to be a yes vote on it today. With the caveat, I may not vote for it when it hits the floor, because there's still a lot more that has to be done. More numbers have to come forward, and then I need to put a little bit more thought into that and ask you some more questions, which we don't. So I will be a yes, but I just want to let you know I may be a no on the floor until I see more. So thank you guys for coming.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any question? Actually, just a quick question. In terms of, from my understanding, certainly we have to determine the actual cost, but that cost really comes from the fact that you have judges who have worked 20-plus years, right? And because they're not getting, you know, something happens before they turn 65. They're just short of 65 or, you know, whatever, depending what time they got appointed. Then what happens is that the system benefits from the fact that they probably got a better return than the judge is going to get in terms of a cash out, because it's just a contribution plus small interest. So in some senses, the, quote, cost of doing this is not because the judge hasn't worked and put in their contributions and those contributions haven't been invested appropriately, but that because you this basically the pension fund got a windfall from a judge not making it to the age that even though they put in the years, correct?
Yeah,
yes.
that's an actuarial assumption that, you know, yes, some judges will die early or will, you know, go somewhere else. That you kind of build that in, and again, right, that's where making the overall liability center morale a little dicey, trying to figure out how, yep, judges will react to any of these changes. The defined benefit is capped at 75% of salary. So if you work longer, you're not going to get a bigger pension. So there's no incentive to stay on the bench. But I believe a lot of the judges do, because they actually love what they do.
But your incentive is you're still going to make 25%, not more on, but your pay to go to work is going to be 25% more. Any average worker that got a 25% pay increase would be happy.
So there's no pay increase.
No, what you're saying, you're only going to collect 75% of your pension.
Yeah.
But if you continue to work, you're still going to get your full salary.
You're working for that extra 25%.
That's not a bad deal. It makes it sound like it's not a bad deal.
Just to clarify, you don't get your pension until you retire, so there's no double dipping.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah, that would be pretty clear. Yeah. Right, okay.
Dr. Pan, could I make one other point addressing partly the concern that Senator Morrell has raised? That $25 million, which is a kind of oddly round number and is sort of the best that could be arrived at this point, is, as I understand from my discussions with PERS, premised upon a static analysis in which they assume that every single judge would leave the bench before 65 or 75. That would not happen. I'm 68. I've been a judge for 15 years. They'll drag me off the bench as long as I am physically and mentally able to do it. And most judges are like that. It would be a tiny percentage. I say this with no reservation and with absolute certainty. There'd be only a tiny percentage of judges who would say, you know what, I've got a good reason I can't wait till 65, or I've got a good reason I can't wait till 70, and it will be a good reason. It'll be one like Judge Ito was talking about.
I appreciate you'll be sticking around, Sacramento. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, is there a motion? Okay, the bill's been moved. I'm recommending an aye vote. Secretary, please call the roll.
The motion is due pass and be referred to Senate Appropriations Committee. Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Morlock.
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Portantino.
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
Okay, the bill is out 5-0. Congratulations. Thank you, Senator Morlock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right, so the next item is item number 2, SB 783. Senator Morlock, Senator Morrell, I'm going to pass the gavel over to you since it's I have to present. Okay. Thank you, Senator Morrell, Chair Morrell, Chair Morrell. All right, SB 783 is a bill that would codify existing regulations that authorize the state departments to provide a leave buyback program for up to 80 hours for supervisory, confidential, excluded, or managerial employees upon a determination by the California Department of Human Resources to offer an annual buyback of this credit. It is important to codify this provision into law to ensure that we protect the rights that are currently in regulation for the those state employees. I respectfully ask for an aye vote.
Supporters of the bill. Any opposition? Questions from the members? We have a motion. Senator, you may close.
I have a question.
Question.
Mr. Chair. Senator Pam, maybe just to get a clarification. As you're accruing these hours during your career, and you're building them up, are you building up hours when you're earning a low salary and then kind of hanging on to those hours and then being paid at a higher salary when you get these paid off? And I'm just, because that was just one of the issues I had when I was a supervisor, how people would leave cash out on these balances and walk out with $500,000 or $300,000. You have to explain it to the press, and the public just doesn't get it because they're walking out at their highest salary. And I'm just wondering how we, if that's a correct assumption, and if it is, how do we deal with it?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's capped at 80 hours, so you can only accumulate so much. It's not like you can accumulate over 20 years and all your vacation and everything. So it is a leave buyback. So that is something that Cal HR will have to decide whether they wish to offer an annual buyback of the credit. So that's,
So is it
80 hours total.
You can only accumulate 80 hours, period.
No.
Hold on. Okay. Okay.
Is this on?
Yes. This is on. Okay. So, Glenn Miles, committee staff, you certainly can accumulate more, but the leave buyback is limited to an 80-hour buyback. And what your assumptions were, your question, effectively, yes, people are accruing these leave. It's leave, so they're accruing it through the course of their career. Essentially, if you're going to put a monetary value to it, when they're getting paid lower, or earlier in their career, they're getting generally a lower salary, and later in their career, they're getting the same time. Actually, they may be getting more time because in our system, the more years you have, the more leave that you accrue. But there is a cap. I don't recall what the cap is. It's like between 640 hours.
Total.
Over
the career, over time, and you build it up. And so that was my concern, is that, you know, you might have been paid $20 an hour when you started, but now you're cashing out at $50 an hour. And I would rather accrue the dollar amount than accrue the hours. See the logic?
I think the idea of the bill is that if people wait till the end of their career to accrue it, they're going to be paid out at the maximum amount. But if you encourage people to take the buyback during the course of their career, they're going to bite the apple off a little bit at their current rate. It's a way of chipping down the future liability for the.
So then it would be paid at their current rate.
Exactly.
It could still be there longer.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Forgive me, I was.
outside Ted Toppin for the Association of California State Supervisors in support. And even more specific to your question, Senator Moorlach, the determination is made annually. CalHR decides annually if they will make this leave buyback program available to supervisors and managers. And then departments have a determination to make their own, which is, do they provide the full 80 hours? Some folks only do 40. Some folks only provide 20. And they usually do it out of existing department budgets. There's no appropriation for this item. They take it out of their existing resources. Alleviating that long-term burden and buying leave credits at a much lower cost. It's a fantastic deal for the state.
One last question for you. This appears like it could save the taxpayers money, but can we say for sure it will not cost them money?
Absolutely. There is, I think now, according to the LAO, $3.3 billion in accumulated leave credit debt the state has. If the state were to buy that leave back, they would be buying it at a much lower cost than they would if they were to buy it at the employee's final year highest compensation. This absolutely saves money by giving employees an option of availing themselves of a leave buyback now instead of later when it's so much more expensive.
Okay, thank you. Good job. You want to close?
I respectfully ask for an aye vote.
The motion is due pass and we'll refer to appropriations. Secretary, please call the roll.
Tim Kramer, full support. Thank you.
It would be a little faster. Okay. I think you already did. Okay. And let's call the roll.
Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leva.
Aye.
Leva, aye. Moorlach.
Aye.
Moorlach, aye. Portantino.
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
We'll keep the roll open. I think everybody's here. Okay. It's done. Bill is passed. Thank you.
Good job, Moorlach.
You know what? Thank you, Senator Portantino. That's the first nice thing you've said to me in 3 years. Thank you.
Always keep hope alive.
Well, I too want to thank my vice chair. Okay, we have one more item, which is a vote only. That's item number 3, SB 681, that was already heard in by this committee. So we're just going to be doing a request for a motion and a vote. So that's, again, SB 681. Is there a motion? Okay, it's been moved. Secretary, please call the roll.
The motion is due pass and re-referred to Senate Appropriations Committee. Pan.
No.
Pan, no. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leva.
No.
Leva, no. Moorlach.
Aye.
Moorlach, aye. Portantino.
No.
Portantino, no.
Okay, the bill fails 2-3. Do you wish reconsideration?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind. Again, okay. I can do reconsideration.
Well, actually, we have done. We did reconsideration? Okay. Well, if you wish to request, then we will do a...
I will request okay. Reconsideration, yes, please.
Right. Well, we'll put... I guess we have to vote to allow the bill into consideration. So, Secretary, please call the roll.
Pan.
Aye.
Pan, aye. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Leva.
Aye.
Leva, aye. Moorlach.
Aye.
Moorlach, aye. Portantino.
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
Okay. All right. With that, this hearing of the Senate Committee on Public Employment and Retirement is adjourned.